Welcome to this special edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We reached out to all candidates filed in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you hear on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. The race for U.S. Senate features three candidates seeking to replace Democrat Tom Carper, who is retiring after four terms and 24 years in the Senate. Today we focus on two candidates, Republican Eric Hansen and the Independent Party of Delaware's Dr. Michael Katz. We start with Hansen, a business executive making his first run for political office. So you talked a little bit about your experience at Walmart and how that's kind of influenced you and your decision to come into the campaign. Are there some other things maybe voters should know about your qualifications for the job?
Yeah. So what I would say is, again, proud non-politician. And I think part of the problem with politics right now are the politicians. And the incentive for politicians are to keep getting reelected and not necessarily to elect the people or to represent the people that elected them. So not being a politician, not being establishment, being a business person who really focuses on the results rather than on the reelection, I think is really important. I have said publicly, and I'm on the record saying this, I will run for one term. And the reason I'm saying I'll run for one term, and then only if the majority of Delawareans think I did a great job in the first term, would I even consider running for two and no more than two, is because it will free me to do the things that most politicians can't do. To do the things that are right for the electorate and the people and not right for getting them reelected. So that really frees me in a way that isn't possible elsewhere.
So I want to talk about some issues. Obviously, voters have consistently listed the economy as a top issue, if not the top issue. The Biden administration does tout low unemployment, strong job numbers recently, along with some other positive economic indicators as signs the country is headed in the right direction. But inflation, higher prices for many people on everyday goods leave many still struggling. What would you support Congress doing to promote economic growth?
Yeah, I think that people really struggle with the cost of living right now. So inflation is high, interest rates are high, housing is high, rental costs, insurance, it goes on and on. And people are not seeing the relief that the press is talking about. You go to the grocery store, you go to the gas pump, you're still feeling the pinch, and a lot of people really struggling. I think the right thing to do is twofold. One is we have to give a tax break to working families that are still struggling with inflation and high cost of living. And number two is we have to get government spending under control. We waste likely $1 trillion or more in the federal government. And if we take that money and we get rid of the wasteful, inefficient spending and spend it on the programs that really do benefit the people, then we stimulate the economy. Everyone has more money in their pocket. It does great things for the government. So it's really about spending correctly and reducing the size of the government to the government that is going to serve the people the best, not the government that's spending the most.
You mentioned tax breaks for those who are hurting the most. When you think about that, what type of bracket are you talking about? I guess what kind of like salary range are you talking about? What are people making that you feel need that tax break?
Yeah, so it's really everyone who's not high income is really struggling right now.
Is there
now
a number you put on high income? Like, what do you consider high income?
So I think anyone who's making as a family more than, say, $150,000 a year is that's roughly twice the household or three times the average household income. So those people are probably doing okay. Mm-hmm. It's and the ultra wealthy are doing just fine in today's economy. Mm-hmm. It's the blue collar workers mm-hmm. that are struggling. It's the average families that are struggling. It's the single moms that are struggling. Those mm-hmm. are the folks that we really have to fix.
Let's move on to immigration. There was a bipartisan border reform bill ready to go before many Republicans backed away at the behest of former President Donald Trump. Would you support that bill if elected?
Yeah, the border is a huge issue. And what I think needs to happen at the border is twofold. One is we have to have the asylum reform, because right now the asylum rules just allow anyone claiming asylum to come in. They come into the country, they wait a long time for a trial, and then essentially they're here forever. Those rules do have to get reformed. At the same time, we do have to make sure that legal immigration is promoted. Make sure that we have as much legal immigration as is appropriate, so we get good key skilled workers in the country, and that we get the jobs that we don't aren't able to fill with American workers, filled with legal immigration. But we have to stop and end the illegal immigration. It's the illegal immigration that's the real problem. So the asylum rules help that. Enforcing the law helps that. And then, unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a good way to stop the influx. So continuing to work on things like fences and borders and walls might be necessary, unfortunately.
But is the fact that there was a bipartisan bill there that did not move forward, is that disappointing to you that there was, even if it wasn't a perfect bill?
Yes.
Should a bill like that move forward just to start taking steps to address some of the things that you're talking about?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do in the government too often is we let perfection get in the way of good or in the way of positive forward momentum. So yes, even if it's not perfect, we need to move the ball ahead and we need to move towards reforms and towards border reforms that help us get to where we need to be. And we can't think about the border as trying to score political points. We just have to solve the problem.
Moving on to another issue, following the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the issue of abortion has been left to the states,
yes,
creating kind of a patchwork of approaches across the country and also leaving questions about other related reproductive issues like IVF. Should Congress step in some way? And if so, how?
So the Dobbs decision pushed abortion back to the states.
Mm-hmm.
And Delaware has been pretty clear on where they stand with respect to abortion. And it would be inappropriate for me as the federal elected official in the Senate to override and defy the will of the people here and to override Delaware law. So I will not vote for a federal abortion ban. Ultimately, it's the decision of the state and the people in the state, and they have made their decision very clear. The other piece of your question was about IVF.
Mm-hmm.
I think IVF is fantastic. I fully support IVF because there's lots of couples struggling to have children right now, and IVF is a path to getting children for those folks. So 100% support of IVF.
Okay. So in the wake of that Roe decision and some others recently by the Supreme Court, President Biden is now suggesting some effort to reform the Supreme Court, whether it be through an ethics code, term limits, something you just talked about for yourself, you would impose upon yourself. Would you support any of those type of Supreme Court reforms?
Yeah. It's late in the game for us to do some of these reforms. But yes, it's time for us to step back and think about what reforms for the Supreme Court might be necessary. And the reason why is that we as a nation have lost some trust in the Supreme Court, and we want to bring that back. It's to the benefit of the country, but the Supreme Court, that we think about what some of those reforms could be.
Do you have any thoughts on those specifically, ethics code or term limits?
So I think the ethics code is a great one because right now it's they're self-managing,
right,
their ethics code. And so I think having a third party think about that makes sense. I think having some term limits makes sense, and having an age limit probably makes sense as well. We've seen the impact of having ages that creep up, mm-hmm, and impact cognitive skills. We don't want that in any branch of the government.
So let's talk a little bit about some foreign policy issues. We'll start with Israel and Gaza. President Biden has been seeking a ceasefire in Gaza for some time to no avail so far. Your thoughts on how the U.S. should be approaching this conflict as it continues to go on and the death toll continues to rise and the hostages taken by Hamas remain still in as hostages?
Right. So first we have to say that Israel is our strongest ally in the Middle East. And so Israel defending itself against Hamas's attack was, I think, entirely appropriate. Hamas's attack was brutal and inappropriate. We do need to try our best, and I support Israel in eradicating Hamas. I feel terrible for the Palestinians caught between Hamas and Israel, and I support humanitarian aid for the Palestinians. But we all have to recognize the fact that Hamas and the Hezbollah organization are essentially proxy war puppets for the Iranian government. And so Iran is not paying the price, nor are we holding them accountable fully for the proxy war that they're waging on their behalf through Lebanon and through the Gaza Strip against Israel. We need to hold Iran accountable for what they're doing.
The other major foreign policy issue is the war in Ukraine. That continues. Where do you stand on continuing support to Ukraine as it continues to fend off a Russian invasion that is now over 2.5 years old?
Yes. Putin's a bully. And unless you push back on bullies, their bullying will continue. So I think keeping Russia in check is the right thing to do. And us keeping Russia from expanding into Ukraine further or into more of Europe is exactly the right thing to do. I think we'll find ourselves on the wrong end of history if we don't. That said, we have done more than our fair share to support Ukraine, and it's really time that NATO steps up and carries a much heavier portion of that burden.
To an issue that is both domestic and kind of global, climate change. Your thoughts on what the federal government and specifically Congress's role should be in trying to blunt the impact of climate change?
So I think the first thing we need to recognize is that no matter what the U.S. does, the China and India coal-fired power plants and their expansion of the use of coal is going to negate anything that we do in the U.S. So I'm not saying we should stop here in the U.S., but the bigger issue is India and China coal. So the first thing that we need to do is start to tariff items that are produced in India, China that are very dependent upon energy. So, for example, glass and steel. If those tariffs are put in place, it provides an incentive for China and India to move away from dirty energy to cleaner energy. That solves a world problem with dirty, polluting climate issues. And then in the U.S., I'm not saying we should stop, but what we should do is probably lean much heavier on innovation than regulation. So mandates don't make sense to me, EV mandate as an example. Okay. But innovation is a great thing. Innovation gave us 80 to 200 years of natural gas through horizontal drilling. Mm. That's fantastic. It allows us to be more energy independent. In fact, you know, maybe an energy exporter. Those are the great kinds of innovation that help us as a nation. And because of the innovation in natural gas, we've been able to switch over from coal to natural gas-fired plants and reduce greenhouse gases in our country by 30%. Fantastic. Exactly the kind of path we should take. Solar is another great one. Right now, China really owns solar. It would be great if U.S. innovation could take back some of that solar energy production to the U.S.
So you're saying perhaps in those type of areas, let's say solar, for instance, you don't want mandates, but you would prefer incentivizing, moving maybe the market along, or how would you push those type of innovations in the direction you want them to go?
Right. It's market-based solutions in combination with incentives.
Okay.
So EV mandate is a perfect example. Instead of telling people you have to buy an EV, even if you can't afford it, even if the charging infrastructure isn't there, even if the auto dealers are reacting negatively, even if farmers could never afford to switch over, small farmers especially switch over to EV farm equipment, a much better choice would be to say, as we have in the past, here's an incentive, and then the market takes over, and then people are more satisfied, and the market moves as it should. So incentives, in my mind, are much better than mandates.
Okay. I do want to ask a very Senate-centric question, and that has to do with the filibuster. There's been a lot of discussion over recent years about doing away with the filibuster. Would you support getting rid of the filibuster, and why or why not?
So I'm not in favor of getting rid of the filibuster. I love the filibuster removal in the sense that it moves the government ahead and we get more results out of the government. But the problem isn't so much because of the filibuster we're not getting results. The filibuster is also keeping us from making bad decisions. So part of the thing that the government was set up to do was prevent bad decisions from being made. The fundamental problem right now is we've got too much polarization in the government right now between the right and the left, and we don't have people willing to work together to get collaboration and get results. So the fundamental problem is collaboration. It's not the filibuster.
So building on that a little bit, this is a time that does seem to be a stronger distrust of government and calls for more transparency and accountability at all levels of government. If elected, what role do you feel you could play personally in delivering greater transparency and accountability and building trust in government through working in Congress?
Yeah. So one of the things is every single agency should be more transparent in what they're doing and the data they're collecting and making sure that there is full transparency. The other thing I think is important is for the legislature to be more transparent as well. Things like term limits I just talked about helps with that. But another thing, for example, that I could propose and I think would be a great idea is that all senators, all congressmen have to put all of their assets and all of their net worth into blind trusts so that they no longer manage their assets and there's no incentive for them to manipulate or to vote in a way that benefits them personally.
Building on that, I mean, we've heard a lot of rhetoric, and you talked earlier about polarization, and a lot of that rhetoric seems to be heated. And even in the wake of the assassination attempt on former President Trump, there was this initial talk about, okay, let's cool the temperature down. It doesn't seem like that has really stuck very much. Do you feel that there's a real problem there, that we are at some kind of tipping point in terms of where our democracy stands and how it's going to move forward, and can it move forward in a productive way?
We are at a tipping point. I've traveled all across Delaware, and I've talked to tens of thousands of people at this point, all across the political spectrum, and everyone largely agrees that we've got major problems we need to solve, and the government's not solving them. So we've got to get to the point where we get to solutions. And part of the problem, I talked before about this, is the politicians. And doing things like term limits provides the incentive so we get to the solutions. But ultimately, it's about collaboration. And right now, we don't have collaboration. We have political polarization, and we have the far left and the far right who aren't talking to each other, and mainstream America is getting left behind. We have to have collaboration. We have to have people who are willing to work together. And as a Republican, reasonable Republican senator from a blue state, that gives me the power to be a collaborator in the way that lots of other folks can't be. Someone who says, I'm going to work as a one-term senator, gives me the power to work and to collaborate in a way that lots of other people can't. Being a non-establishment, non-politician gives me the power to work across the aisle in a way that people can't. It's about getting results that impact everyone, no matter what your political affinity.
I want to finish by asking you if there's an issue we haven't discussed that you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle, and how you would address it if elected.
We've got a couple issues I really want to tackle.
Sure.
One is the economy and debt and deficit that are out of control. The fact that we don't have balanced budgets at the federal level is absurd. The fact that even once we start spending, we still have continuing resolutions and supplemental spending that spend beyond our means. That's just not appropriate. So the economy and the budget and the debt and deficit have to be fixed. At the same time, we do have to protect things like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, these entitlement programs, but we just have to reform them so that we're spending wisely in those entitlements. The other thing we have to fix is crime. Violent crime in Delaware is, last year, highest rate in increase in violent crime in the country. We have to tackle violent crime. And the way to do that is, if we can't get state prosecution, we'll bring in federal prosecutors to prosecute violent criminals in Delaware. And then the last thing is education. Education across the country is not where it needs to be, but in Delaware, especially bad. And what we've shown is, historically, spending more is not the solution. We can't throw more money at the problem and expect the same solution. We have to do things differently. So education is the last piece I think is critically important to fix.
That's Republican candidate for U.S. Senate Eric Hansen. Our full conversation with him is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, our candidate conversation with Dr. Michael Katz, the Independent Party of Delaware's candidate for U.S. Senate. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.